entitled The House That George Romney Built. Lewis, are you there?
I am. Thanks for having me on the show, Noah.
Oh, you're welcome.
And Sarah.
Yeah, we're so glad you could join us.
Tell us about the house that George Romney built. You mentioned in the article that he was overseeing housing and urban development during the Nixon administration when they came up with the idea of mortgage-backed securities.
Yes. So the op-ed draws on my new book, Borrow the American Way of Debt, and explains how the mortgage-backed security was invented at this intersection of state policy and investment banks. And in the op-ed, I talk about how Mitt Romney's father, George Romney, who was the HUD secretary under Nixon, oversaw the very first mortgage-backed security in 1970.
Huh. But this was actually, I mean, it's a bipartisan issue because it sounds like it was first passed as part of President Johnson's National Housing Act of 1968. And we know that administration after administration has been pushing a home ownership policy, right, over the decades?
Yes, this isn't a Republican or Democrat issue. On both sides of the aisle, people broadly agreed that the best way to help out Americans, especially poor Americans in the post-war period, get their share of the American dream was to help them own a home. And so in the op-ed, I argue that they confused the symptom and the cause of prosperity in the post-war period. They looked around, they saw the suburbs, they saw how prosperous the suburbs were, and they thought, oh, well, it's because they owned houses, when in reality, it's because they had good jobs, good, stable, well-paying jobs that were secure and allowed them to buy homes for the long time. But dealing with job policy is very hard, but structuring ways to make borrowing easier was not as difficult, though, of course, more complex.
And, you know, we've seen over the decades how this has affected housing and urban development's policies as far as affordable housing goes, because certainly the biggest HUD programs right now that are providing so-called affordable or low-income housing are usually, there are programs like HOPE 6 that supposedly tear down large housing projects and provide a mix of so-called ownership for middle-income families in these kind of semi-suburban-like dwellings. The idea is to stop having, warehouses, what they call warehouses of the poor. And I just wonder how much of the policy was directed by these huge pools of money that were coming into from outside investors, from pension funds. You mentioned some of the sources of the money that came in to back mortgages.
Sure, and large pools of money had always backed mortgages since the 1930s, basically, when the federal government created the FHA, which basically connected the money from insurance companies in the big eastern cities, mostly in New York, with houses and home buyers around the country. So there had been a long history of this connection between finance and everyday sort of home buying for a long time. What the mortgage-backed security did was it took all those individual mortgages that the a local bank would lend, then the bank could resell to Fannie Mae, and then Fannie Mae would in turn sell it to an insurance company. But it would sell the entire mortgage. It would sell everything along with it to the insurance company. What the mortgage-backed security did was combine all those mortgages, then slice them up into small amounts so that you could just buy a bond and then not have to directly own the mortgage itself. And this allowed people who didn't want to own mortgages, like pension funds, international investors, institutional investors that were outside of the insurance business, to start putting money up for mortgages. And that's actually exactly what happened.
Hmm. You mentioned actually in your op-ed that this wasn't the first time that while the 2008 bubble was a huge bubble bursting, it wasn't the first time after the program was created by Johnson that we had a bursting of the bubble. Was it after that first burst, the first time we had this huge deflation in prices, that they came up with the idea of slicing up these securities?
Well, it's very interesting you say that. Actually, in the book, I write a lot about the 1920s, where there was a financial instrument called participation certificates that were very similar to mortgage-backed securities that were, in fact, behind the housing boom and bust of the Great Depression that were then outlawed, basically, by the Federal Reserve in the 1930s, only to come back in this new guise. And what happens, I talk about in the op-ed, I talk about how this money from these mortgage-backed securities was intended to flow to the poorest Americans, especially in the inner city, especially after the riots of the 1960s, to brace up the urban economy. But then I say, and this is why where my criticism is for the Nixon administration, and I think it applies broadly to all the subsequent administrations, that it focused on the consumer side rather than the business side. So, for instance, in the program you were just talking about, helping people get better housing, this is important, but why not help them get better housing by funneling all that money into job creation through business funding? And we've seen over the last 40 years the strangling of small business. And, of course, small business doesn't just mean, you know, a mom-and-pop store or a plumbing business. It can be businesses, any business less than 500 employees. So we're talking actually about what you and I would consider to be medium-sized businesses, people with the tens of millions of dollars in revenue every year. These kinds of businesses have a very difficult time getting financing. They're not big enough to issue bonds on Wall Street. They're not big enough to have an IPO, but they are big enough to require capital to grow. And right now, it's so much easier for banks to invest in consumer debt than in business debt because of securitization that you've seen this sort of strangling off of that money into businesses. And so in the op-ed, I pitch, which is part of an idea I have, to actually make it just as easy to invest in businesses which produce good jobs as in consumer debt, which doesn't produce anything.
Well, that's what I found so compellingly reasonable about your op-ed, that wouldn't it have made sense to put all of this money? Of course, I suspect securitizing small business debt is a little trickier than securitizing a mortgage. Then again, the mortgages got so tricky once they began packing them together and slicing them up. But I know that a lot of the money poured into the mortgage securitization because they were guaranteed such high returns on the riskier the mortgages were, they were guaranteed even higher returns on their investments or something like that. You know, they were so sliced and diced. But what I found so compelling about your op-ed was the idea that we could have put this money towards developing businesses inside of our cities instead of tearing down large projects and trying to suburbanize parts of the inner city and blah, 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 on and on.
Exactly. I feel like it's actually a pretty moderate position. It doesn't feel very right or left to me. It feels just very practical in trying to figure out ways to make it, you know, that you're talking about the slicing and dicing. Well, the slicing and dicing worked for about 40 years, right? So we have mortgage-backed securities, not for the inner cities after the collapse of this program in the early 1970s, but by the mid-1970s, they're pretty commonplace in terms of funding middle-class housing. So for a long time, it did work. What didn't work was that we overextended the model in terms of lending to riskier and riskier and riskier housing, and we pretended it wasn't risky, right? We pretended it was AAA, and what we need to do is make that kind of risk transparent and, of course, charge a premium so that a business has to pay a higher rate if it's a riskier investment. But businesses can handle that. Businesses do that all the time, and businesses make profit. So the money going into these businesses will cause growth and profit, and, of course, some will fail. But, you know, all businesses fail, and all homes, a lot of homes have recently been foreclosed on, I hear. So it's not the case that homes are totally safe investments either. But what we do know is that when you put money into a business, it produces growth in jobs. And when you put money into a house, well, it doesn't produce anything, particularly if that home is not a new home, right? If that new home is just resold, right? So that's the basic idea, and I think it's something that we should, you know, just try to open up the conversation about it.
Well, Lewis Hyman is the assistant professor of history at the ILR School at Cornell. He's the author of Borrow, the American Way of Debt. And he's been talking today about an op-ed that he had in the New York Times called "The House That George Romney Built." I hope that Mitt Romney is learning from the lessons of his father over at Housing and Urban Development. And thanks so much, Lewis, for taking time to come on the show to talk about it.
Well, and this might be such a simple point, but I appreciated so much the article just because it's a reminder that the crises that we're facing are not natural disasters or the results of policies and pedagogy. So just the importance of really developing a historic analysis and analysis of how we got where we are in order to inform next steps and also in order to inform people's rage and pain.
Well, thank you so much. I think it's the big point I want to drive home is that you can't understand these kinds of financial crises without understanding not just the people who lent and borrowed, but also the role of wages and jobs within that. And I think bringing those things all together in a way that is actually how things work, not ideological, I think is the important next step to finding a good solution. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh, thanks for coming on.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well,